problems with the minutes anyone saw? Then I'd look for a motion.
I'll move we approve the minutes.
Got to go on the mic, Ed.
I'll move we approve the minutes.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. And oral communications. Anyone in the audience who wishes to address anything that's not on the agenda, now is the time to do that. Seeing no one else coming forward, we will move to presentations and action items. The first item is an appeal of the denial for commercial fishing slip qualification, item 4-1. Mr. Algert?
Good evening, Board and Mr. Chairman. The city has 50 slips that we manage. Those 50 slips are by ordinance of the City Council dedicated or priority assignments are given to commercial fishing vessels. Commercial fishing vessel qualifications are required every year for each vessel that has a slip assignment in city slips. It's a formula that they have to provide either $5,000, a minimum of $5,000 in fish tickets for each year to the city harbor office, or $1,000 per ton, per net ton of the vessel, whichever is higher. So the way that works is many of our smaller vessels have a low net ton, so they would provide us $5,000 in fish tickets for the previous year to qualify for the next year. Bigger boats oftentimes might have a net tonnage of, say, 24,000. So in that case, then they would have to provide us the higher amount. They provide 24,000 in fish tickets. We have had a couple of instances in my time here when we have actually had to terminate slips for qualifications. I'm thinking three or four. We've also had a number of slip holders who have just left knowing they wouldn't qualify. We've also had two occasions in the past. Well, one sort of unique situation, I think, which year it was here without looking, but one year we did a blanket waiver. I think it was 1998 by order of the City Council. We did a blanket waiver from having to qualify for all slip holders. And one other occasion, we had a special request to, well, I should say, to set the table for that. The resolution that the ordinance ties to a resolution that sets the policy out, and that resolution actually does provide a mechanism for the Harbor Advisory Board to hear an appeal of a denial of a waiver, of a denial of a qualifications for a waiver. And we had two slip holders appeal once before based on that language and the resolution to the Harbor Advisory Board, and the Harbor Advisory Board at that time did grant them a one-year additional waiver based on giving them time to sell their vessels or rectify the situation. So there is some flexibility for you. There isn't a whole lot of flexibility for me, though, in carrying out the policy of the city. So in this situation here this year, we had a gentleman named Jerry Coffey who had used up his two waivers in 10 years. He applied for another waiver, and I had to turn him down, and that's fine. We wrote him a letter denying the waiver. He wasn't qualified because he used up his two in 10. He then wrote you a letter, which is in your packet, spelling out the circumstances.
You'd like to say to the board, I've read your letter, and I understand you've had some health issues.
That's correct. No, really, I have nothing more to add other than what I laid out in the letter there. I began fishing here in 98 commercially, or 99, I believe, the first year that I qualified. I didn't request a slip until 2000 or 2001. And the first 3 or 4 years, I did make all my qualifications. And due to injuries I suffered on the job, I was put out of commission for almost two complete years. And a friend of mine fished my boat a little bit, but we didn't have enough fish tickets to qualify. So basically, I'm not here saying that I deserve anything. I'm just saying if you can find a place to let me stay in a slip, I'd appreciate it. I've put a substantial amount of money in my boat this year. I purchased a commercial salmon ticket, and I rigged the boat for salmon. And I've also rigged the boat for black cod, hoping to enter that fishery directly following salmon season this year.
Go ahead. Jim.
Mr. Coffey, your letter indicated that your injuries, although surgery is healed, it wouldn't permit you to go back to work for the Sheriff's Department.
That's correct.
but they are healed enough that you can resume fishing. And is that correct?
Yes, sir. What happened was I destroyed what they call the basal joint in each one of my wrists where the thumb attaches to the wrist. And following surgery, I regained about 60% of my strength in my thumbs. But my surgeon tells me that's the best I can ever expect. Before the surgery, I had 2 pounds of pressure. I literally couldn't pick up a book. And if they'll give me the opportunity.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any more questions?
Why don't you have a seat, and we'll call you back up if we have further questions.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
I have a couple questions for Rick on this. It says here that there's one other eligible person to take this slip.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes, we would have the waiting list is shorter than it used to be, but there is one boat that we think would want the slip if it was offered to them on the waiting list.
You're not absolutely sure.
Yeah, local boat. Yeah, we have not offered it to them yet or discussed it with them because it didn't seem appropriate.
Okay. And there are two yachts that are occupying fish slips at the current time, are there not?
Well, there's two slips that we don't permanently assign to fishing vessels. And maybe that's what you're talking about, the ones by the fishing pier, the narrow ones there, or at least that one narrow one by the fishing pier at Anchor Park.
Yeah, there's one down there, and then there's one down at Tidelands where there's a little sailboat in there that's been there for at least a year or more.
Maybe Sweet Pea?
No, Sweet Pea's up there. I know where Sweet Pea is.
Okay, Sweet Pea, yeah. he's on a transient. He's on the transient sublease right then, because for whatever reason, you know, when the person who's permanently assigned that slip is gone, all those slips, to my knowledge, all those slips down at Tidelands Park are permanently assigned to qualified commercial fishing vessels.
How long can they sublease then?
It's supposed to be rotating every 90 days if there's somebody else that wants their slip.
This is what?
You know, and I wish I knew the exact circumstance of that, but I think the situation is there that it's assigned to a permanent slip holder who must be gone.
It's been there for a very long time.
Yeah,
I've never seen anybody.
I can state with pretty good assurance that all those slips down there at the Lawn Tramp are assigned. But what I'd like to do is, you know, I don't want to be evasive, but I don't know the exact circumstances of that, so I would be happy to report back in public on that situation in the next meeting.
Well, my opinion is that if we have private yachts, I mean, pleasure boats that are occupying fishing slips, then this gentleman probably has more right to it than the yacht does.
Well, there are no assigned slips to yachts, okay. So even the to non-commercial vessels, I should say, that yachts is sort of a term that we should probably get away from,
okay.
Non-commercial fishing vessels. So, for example, the slip that is not permanently assigned is one by the Anchor Park fishing pier, because it's narrow and hard to maneuver into, is one that we make available for the sublease rate to vessels.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, where Sweet Pea has been, right? And anyway, but I sometimes lose track of all these boats. I should know better, but that's...
Maybe Mr. Algert could get back to us on that. But I guess I have a follow-up question. If a fisherman decided that due to current regulations he needed to go up to Oregon or even Alaska to make a living,
mm-hmm.
but this was home port and his boat was gone for a couple of years, as long as he was landing fish... You would allow him to keep that?
Can keep qualifying with California fish tickets or use their 2 and 10 waivers. They can keep the slip assignment here, and we have various stages of that going on. I can think of another boat right now, too, that's just decided because of the situation here in California, they're going to go up and fish in southeast Alaska this year for salmon. And so they'll be gone most of the year, maybe even over the winter. But... So, you know, this is a very fluid business, but what they'll do is, and what their rate goes to for you when a person notifies us that they're going to be gone at least a month, and they can get the vacancy rate, which is 40% of the regular SIP rate, and then we get the advantage of being able to rent it out at our sublease rate, which is higher than the normal slip fee. So it works out okay from us as long as we do a good job of keeping the slips full with the subleases.
Hopefully that made sense.
Yep. Okay. Any other?
One other quick question for Mr. Coffey. You're asking for one extra year on the waiver. You've had two that you've gotten.
You need
so you
to
just
step
need
up to
one
the microphone
more in
for
order.
The record. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am, that's correct. I have outfitted my boat for salmon. Commercial salmon season opens May 1, and I hope to be right in the fray.
Okay.
And then following that, I plan to fish black cod. I have the gear purchased already to enter that fishery.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else?
I don't have any questions of him. I have some statements to make.
Have you checked the regulations on black cod yet?
Well, I understand it's 300 a day or 700 a week right now, and we don't know what's going to happen.
So it's not going to be limited entry?
They threatened limited entry for the last 3 years, but it hasn't happened yet, so really no one knows yet what's going to fall.
Okay.
Fishing regularly now, commercial fishing regularly.
Well, with that...
To get on our waiting, maybe this helps too, to get on our waiting list, you have to qualify.
Right.
So, okay.
My sentiments is this. I mean, I'm sympathetic towards his injuries. But for one, we have a lot of fishermen here that are full-time, bust their ass, they're waiting for slips. In your case, I would not give you a year. I'd give you 6 months. Because you got salmon season open May 1st, and the best part of the season, May, June, July. And if you do fish black cod, you'd have no problem making at least a $5,000 limit. I don't know how big your boat is.
It's a 25.
But I'm telling you, I wouldn't give you a year. I'd give you 6 months. That's my opinion. You guys can say what you'd like. But that's as far as I'd go.
Well, my feeling was, given these circumstances and the fact that Mr. Coffey had met the minimums in the past, I was leaning towards a year myself, but making it clear that there wouldn't be any other variances. And if your health problems reoccur, you'd have to make other arrangements. That would be my feeling, because the boats do have to qualify, and for whatever reasons, not just because somebody is choosing not to go out, and we've had problems. I'm sure you're aware of boats that want to tie up, and they're really no longer commercially active. Some even with liveaboards, and we really, our goal, and I think our duty, is to make sure that working boats are in those slips. So we've had, my suggestion would be to allow the year, just because that's when the anniversaries for all of them come up. But if the board, wants to go along with Mr. Ewing's suggestion, we've got a couple of choices here. I'm getting a sense that some of us at least are inclined to give you a chance now that you're recuperated. A one-time chance, I think, is the sense that I would want to have on it to reestablish yourself. So anybody else who hasn't spoken on this? Go ahead.
I was just wondering if it would be, I guess that's a question for Rick, if it would be a hardship on the Harbor Department having a lease come up in September.
No, I'm sure we could deal with that. Let's see, does that make any difference if you'd made it 6 months or a year? Typically, we qualify people at one time, and that is certainly convenient. I don't want to get out of that process of, trying to. It's a pretty big administrative job to get out the letters and get everybody to come in and bring all their fish tickets at the beginning of the year for the previous year. I mean, a one-time exception we can deal with, but I don't want to get in this process of getting qualifications all different times. So there's just a warning there. But it wouldn't matter to me. I'm not sure I understand your principle and what you're saying, and I appreciate it. Maybe this is a good time for me to say I think we do have a duty to folks on the waiting list to hold fast to our rules, but it also, the policy is clear, so I don't want to be contrary to city policy, but we have no objection to a situation like this or for a one-year extension. But I would object. If it happened again next year with the same individual, I would have to say that really that should not be done. Maybe one time is really all I would ever go on before you would start hearing us
say this just isn't right. I don't think we're fulfilling our duty to other people on the waiting list. But that being said, you know, you can, if you want to make it 6 months, we could deal with it. I don't know why you wouldn't just give them 1 year, and we'll see how it goes.
The reason I said that 6 months is because either he's going to make it or he's not going to make it. And if he can't make $5,000 in 6 months, he doesn't even deserve the slip. Now, his wrists are either healed up or they're not, and he's either going to do it or he's not. And if you prefer to wait till December 31st or January 1st, that's fine with me, but that's the only reason I said the 6 months, because then the onus is on him. He can either make it or he can break it. But I wouldn't give him another chance. He's lucky he's getting this one.
Okay, well, I understand your point a little bit better, too. Then the slip could potentially be assigned before next January, February, March. So I understand that now.
Which, any feeling from other members of the board whether you want to try for 6 months or go with a year, which is the standard?
I'll support the 6 months extension.
Okay. Anyone else?
So is the year extension, is that to the remainder of this year?
If I may speak, that
sure, Mr. Coffey.
That was my request, was to be extended through the end of this year, from January 1 till December, not through next April.
Yeah, our qualifications anyway are, we ask them to bring them in for a calendar year, so we only accept the tickets based on a calendar year, but, you know, they come in January, February, March of each year. So I guess if we went
6 months from now,
they would have to be tickets for this year, not 12 month period preceding or anything. They would all have to be in this calendar year.
So that would go till April, May, June, July, September, the end of September.
How about the end of salmon season? Or do we
That's
know?
Just about it.
Yeah.
I think end of September it's over with, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah.
Unless they change it, I can remember. Well, that's another subject. Mr. Coffey,
yes, sir.
Do you think that that's an unreasonable request? Because I'm getting a sense the board wants to give you a chance to get back as an established commercial fisherman. I would suspect in a smaller boat like that, that's going to be the meat of your fishing season anyway.
That's potentially true. I don't know. We never know how fishing is going to go. Of course, I would prefer to have it until the end of December, but I'm at your mercy.
Okay. Well, I'm getting a sense that the board wants to go through the end of September, and I would entertain a motion to that effect.
I make a motion we extend his lease agreement until the end of September on this appeal and approve the appeal until then.
I'll second that.
Just to clarify the motion, I think, so you basically grant a six-month waiver from having to qualify for the slip
right.
agreement.
Not from the first of the year, from the first of April.
Maybe. So let's put a date on it. Perhaps
end
your
of
motion
September.
Is end of September that to grant a waiver from till the end of September.
That's fine.
Thank you.
Okay, motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Very good. Thank you.
I think our...
We like salmon.
I think our existing policy allows me to administratively implement that, so that would be... And I'll go along with that, and we'll just work with that, and we'll notify you in September or your October meeting probably of the results of that.
Wonderful.
Smoked salmon's okay.
Have a great season.
Thank you very much.
You don't want to stay for the rest of the meeting? You don't have to.
That's there wouldn't be enough room for me to sit.
Well, we saved a chair. Okay. Item 4.2, newspaper racks. Jim, you're going to take the lead on this, I believe.
This is an issue that I brought up, I believe, last October. And then due to either lack of a meeting or whatever, I thought it would be best to go back and review what I did in October quickly and then add some additional information that I've gathered since then. Before I start that, I do want to apologize to the board and the staff for missing last month's meeting. I did gain the necessary evidence that it can be dangerous to be around grandkids in terms of them being disease carrying. My wife and I both got the flu, but I did watch board on television, and I was pleased to see the board's support of the city's public art project policy, and I have admired Jane Beeman's remodeling of the garbage can on the Embarcadero here, and I've always felt that any city benefits from a clean appearance, and that the motto of Morrill Bay Beautiful reflects the pride that people have in this city. The newspaper racks are, in my opinion, one of those things that you can drive by or ride by or walk by every day of the week, and you become accustomed to, and you don't focus on them, and you don't realize how ugly they can be. So last October I showed some pictures of some of them that line the Embarcadero, and they'll go from the north. I can't see exactly where they are, but they go from the north part of the Embarcadero to the south part of the Embarcadero, from about the Coast Guard station down to Tidelands, down to the bathrooms at Tidelands Park, and I may not even have one of that place. Maybe just go ahead and go through those a little bit.
That one up there now is Tidelands Park.
You want to start at the north end or south end?
Well,
here's the north end part of the north end.
Yeah, that's the north end there. Now that one happens to be on private property, and the other one is near Verges there. And then if we're going in the correct direction, the next one would be the south tier keep here, and I guess where Giovanni's is. But that's not, it's not a terribly long distance from this north area to the south area. And my first little bit of survey was just simply to do some counting. And I came up with a grand total of 93 of these things between those two locations.
And
was it 90? Oh, I'm sorry. It is 92. There was 13 at the state park. So we're going to probably discount those because it's a question of whether we can mess with a state park's property or not. But there's 79 anyway on this part of the Embarcadero, and a couple of those are actually on the east side of the Embarcadero, which makes 77 of them on the west side of the Embarcadero. Now, he's going to put some other, which you had in your packet last time, some other maps that I drew out by hand that will focus on each of the major intersections. And if we have the same ones in hand, do you have Giovanni's there? I think so.
Yeah. Right now.
Okay. One of the points that I want to make is not only that these news racks are, that there's a large number of them. But secondly, part of the issue is that they provide space for distribution of newspapers. And I wanted to show the board and the public that newspapers really isn't their major purpose, I don't think, because if you do a tally of them, there's 1620 near Giovanni's there, and there's two of them that have newspapers in them. The Bay News is in one and the Tribune's in the other. All of the rest have coupon guides, travel discounts, car.com, real estate books, and so forth. some of them repeat themselves. So there's sometimes there's four or five news racks with the same real estate book in them. If you go to, I guess the next one is the Pacific Street End. This one is where it seems that most of the news racks, the newspapers are, which is kind of a central part of the Embarcadero and maybe appropriate place to put them. But here we have the Tribune, the Sun Bulletin, the Fresno Bee, the LA Times, and the US Today paper. So we have five out of 13 there that are actually papers. The rest, again, are repeats of coupons and real estate advertising. And we go to the next one. There's a total of eight, and there's one newspaper. And the rest are, again, a repeat of the same kind of real estate and coupons and that sort of thing. So thank you for that. That's the additional information that I gathered. So the point is that we have from the north part of the Embarcadero to the south part of the Embarcadero to the launch ramp, 77 or 79 newspaper racks just on the west side of the Embarcadero. And they are overwhelmingly used for purposes other than distributing newspapers. And in our packets last week, let me go back for a minute just to October, because in October we got on that date that I brought this issue up, we got a piece of information from the city attorney, and it suggested that there's been some difficulties in the past of getting rid of news racks because of First Amendment rights to distribution of that sort of thing.
Jim, did they make a distinction between newspapers and advertisement papers?
Well, apparently in the past they haven't, mostly because the newspapers print the real estate coupons and then somebody is paid to distribute them around. So
the reason I asked was the freedom of speech thing is one thing for newspapers, but for advertisements, I'm not so sure, and that's the splitting hairs.
We're going to let the city attorney and the legal people make that determination. I understand. Yeah. And there's probably been a determination somewhere, and we're not going to try and change state and federal laws. We're just going to try to work with the existing laws and
suggest
we Well, and I'll give you a warning there. It may not be the answer you want, but I think that just to that memo was it's not totally clear, but it probably the safest way to go is to consider that all of those publications, newspapers or real estate guides, have First Amendment rights because you could get challenged. Otherwise, they're circulated by newspapers. So other than things that are clearly pornography or other issues, they for other reasons, they may be protected by First Amendment. So that, that you can't just say, I want only newspapers as I define them, and all the rest got to go.
Yeah. Let me bring that issue up, because I think that's an important part of what is included in one of these cases, the case in Santa Barbara, where they have apparently taken their ordinance to the court and tested the validity of it. Okay, and I agree that there's no indication that you can limit, you can define what's First Amendment protection or not. So we can't say that, but it does seem that we can, the city can, not we, the Harbor Advisory Board, but the city can. They can limit and they can restrict to some degree where news racks are placed. And it does indicate, too, that in order to maintain those and keep them maintained and pick up the ones that are thrown on the ground and that sort of thing, that permits can be given to those who use them and fees can be charged for those permits. So, and I think we had it in our packet, too, showed a picture of an example of that. Is that in the packet? You remember that? It showed one. It's got Pleasant on the top, which means or suggests to me that there's some other cities that have done something similar to this and probably have been successful. So, but this is something that's occurring in the downtown area of Paso Robles, where they're requiring the news racks to be put in Cossacks, so that they're limited in number. There is a little cost to it, but I think for achieving control of both the number and the appearance of them, the amount of cost is probably worth the price. Anyway, that's about what I have to say. I know that we as a group would suggest an ordinance. I don't know anything about writing an ordinance, so I wouldn't have a clue where to start with that.
You know,
if you want to talk on
the if you would bear with that, Gene was making, I don't know if Gene wants to say something, but I might just for the audience sake read just a little bit of these conclusions that we came to might help. That I'll be quick. You know, we to summarize, I think where Jim's and my concerns that we or the conclusions we came to. Currently, the number and mixed designs of these news racks do present a traffic and pedestrian nuisance, do affect negatively the aesthetics and views in their current locations, and do add to the litter clutter problem on the waterfront, leading to negative business environment and public impression. The best approach would be attempt to regulate only Embarcadero area to start, and at least at first, and to provide designated sites within a reasonable and, in many cases, better than the current public access and visibility. So, you know, that's a conclusion that I would emphasize again, is we're not going to try to put these in a place where nobody will find them. We're going to find equal or better sites and designate them, and that would be our recommendation in the Embarcadero only. Although it would require funding by the city, presumably by the Harbor Fund, it would be best to provide city-approved and purchased boxes. See final attachment, the picture that Jim was talking about. There are a number of cities that have done variations on this. Either you designate a site and you say you can bring in a box, you can provide a box of your own, but it has to meet our design criteria, or we'll provide the box and we'll permit you and you may pay a small fee to use the box. This would mean a permit-type regulation, so there's administration to it, which is a pain, but unfortunate, but that's the way the world is. Number four, good designated locations. The city provided news racks with equal or better access to the public publication distributors, and then we went on to list a number of areas that we thought would basically be as comprehensive and we hope might even be acceptable to the newspaper distributors because they're as good as spots, so we just limit the type of box and the amount of boxes in those sites, and put in some cases they would be on the east side rather than the west side, and in some cases they would be in improved location for pedestrian, public safety, traffic, things like that. So finally, the city council would have to pass an ordinance to regulate news racks. City staff is very concerned about any proposed regulation that might end up with significant time and money and legal challenges, as has happened in so many other agencies, and Paso Robles is one that had a lawsuit and was challenged, and they've had to, they're redoing their ordinance now based on that legal challenge. Santa Barbara is an ordinance we provide you that has been successfully been implemented without legal challenge, is my understanding. A good process is to suggest such regulations is to prepare a rough draft ordinance with a memo to council asking them to entertain the concept and refer the proposal to the city attorney for review and comment. And the reason I suggest that is we could just send it up to council with a recommendation that they address this, but it might not get very speedy. I see Roger already is. It might not move to the top of the list very fast. If you want it to really move to the top of the list, we could do a little more work and provide them a draft ordinance that would be less work for the city attorney if they chose to review it. And once, you know, if they liked it and they referred it to him, it would be much quicker reviewed by the city attorney would be my impression. And maybe Roger would, or I'll turn it back to the board at that point.
Gene, you had a comment or a question.
Yeah, I'm just biting at the chomp on this one. Can anybody just put something down there?
That's my
belief, you know, they are, I think, distributed by one or two distributors, mostly the same people who distribute for the Tribune.
So if I wanted to put a little stand on there and had some flyers that said, you know, house for sale or architect to hire or something or other, anybody in the city can do this?
I don't have any regulations that I'm aware of that I can force. You can't cause litter, and I've wondered at times when these things do blow in the wind, there's possibly an infraction with that, but...
Just, it just blows me away that somebody can use public space to... I might say is each one of these street ends is considered a scenic view shed, and maybe we can use that to illuminate these things. That's it.
Anyone else? Lynn?
I think it's a great idea. I'd love to see the things gone and have something a bit more attractive. It would be mostly a matter of how do I dress it and get it through the city council. And so you say that Paso Robles had one that was challenged. We should probably look at that one as well as the Santa Barbara, which has not been challenged, and maybe do some detail work on that to try and avoid, figure out what the problems in Paso were and avoid those.
I think that Mr. Algert suggested something that I think is probably true, and that is if we just come up with an idea, the city council is far more involved in their budget crisis right now, which is very real, and there are other things that the city attorney is doing. He's very busy. I think we would better serve the community to slow down a little bit and come up with an ordinance that has been tested. The League of California Cities is a great resource, and I'm sure that Mr. Algert could, with the city attorney's help, find out if there are some others out there besides these two we know about in our general area, because I think what we'd like to do is come up with something we can live with that is not going to cost the city money in legal challenges. And First Amendment stuff, big corporations like the companies that own newspapers, they're not just local, they're national, and they don't they'll fight anything is my sense. You know, that's why people go to jail over this stuff and sit there on it. I think we owe it to the city not to bring something forward that's going to bring about that sort of thing. If we could give Mr. Algert a couple of months to find out from the League of California Cities, for instance, which is a good resource, ask some more questions about Santa Barbara's ordinance, if it hasn't been challenged. I didn't see a date on it. There may have been one, but and something in theirs that bothered me was the fact that if the racks were owned by the newspaper company, there were suggestions on how they should be maintained, but they were only suggestions. They were not enforceable, and probably it was written that way for fear of, again, stepping on somebody's toes. So it might be better if the city, if the Harbor Department or the Harbor Fund purchased the racks so they would be maintained by the city, and then a rent charged for those using them. And that way we have more control over the condition they're maintained in. Because as I read the Santa Barbara ordinance, it looked like whoever was using it was asked to keep them in good order, but they could not require them to. And I'm sure that's why that language was put in there, because they weren't allowed to require anything. And we've all looked at the condition of these things. They're deplorable. You know, as long as the hinge still works and they can keep the thing latched, they don't replace them.
I got to say again, this is the most important view shed of Morro Bay. Every one of these street ends up and down in the Barcadero, this is where the people come to see the water. And it blows me away that they can just put this trash in front of it.
I agree, and I think that we all want to put an end to it, but we want to do it in a way that's already been legally tested, so we're not having to back up and go, oh, sorry, we inconvenienced you and we've spent a lot of money, and they get to go back to doing what they were doing before. I think we'd like to do it right rather than do it fast. Jim?
I would like to do it right rather than fast, too, and I certainly don't want to bring additional legal troubles to the city, but I don't have, as I mentioned, I don't have enough legal understanding to read these ordinances in a way that, and I've got quite a bit of education, in a way that I can understand it. But Paso Robles, for example, has one of its requirements, the protection of minors, by an attempt there to prevent material that upon viewing is harmful matter. Well, that gets you in trouble right there. So that might be something that caused Paso Robles to get into trouble. And yet I don't know that. But I don't want to at the same time give up doing something and along with it. So what I would like to do is to participate with Rick, if that who eventually this responsibility falls on him, have the board's permission to continue to work, doing whatever is necessary to move us along in the direction of putting together a rough draft of an ordinance that we can forward on to the city council.
And I'm sure there are a number of more, wasn't it Pleasanton? Is that the other one the photograph is of? I'm sure that there are communities that are, you know, Carmel, I'm sure, has a regulation. You know, you ever see their sign ordinance? Anyway, I'm sure that there are other communities that are just as concerned as we are about this. And if somebody's got an ordinance that's working, takes care of the problem, I happen to know that the city of Morro Bay, in the fact, has taken advantage of work done by other cities and just changed a few words, and then you know you're okay legally. And let the pioneers be the ones who take the heat on the legal challenges. If we can find one that's already in place somewhere, has been tested, and would work here, I think we're doing the citizens a favor, and we're going to have something that works. So I think maybe not next month, but the month after that, you could come back with what you've discovered as far as a couple of choices on really workable ordinances that are secure.
Well, I won't promise, you know, in 2 months, but I mean, if Mr. Phillips sells himself short, he's done a lot of great work on this and helped, if he'll keep helping, and there's a lot of stuff available, you know, that we can find, and we can pull something together. If we move at this at a slow bell, we'll get back to you within, you know, hopefully 2, 3, or 4 months and provide you an update or a draft or something. Keep working on it. But I'm willing to. I think it's a problem, too. I hope we can address it. It's, you know, and it's not going to do anything but get worse.
Well, I said 2 months because I was hoping for this summer, but then as I think that through, even if we made a decision, the council would have to agendize it. They'd have to have the 30-day waiting period after they pass the first reading for it to become an ordinance. So reality is we're going to miss this summer anyway. But I want to accomplish this, and I really do appreciate your hard work on this, Jim. But I really am concerned that we not be the ones who create an unnecessary legal expense for the city in trying to do something good. So, and I've seen, we just don't want to go there if we can help it. And there have to be approved ordinances in other places that are working well. So, with the board's support, I guess I'd suggest that Mr. Phillips work with Mr. Algert and see what they can come up with, and hopefully it can be done in a timely fashion. Is there anyone else that wants to work with Mr. Phillips on this, or you want to just wait and see what they come up with? I think we all want the same end result. Don't see anybody raising their hand, Jim. It's you. All right, so we won't take any further time on this unless anyone wants to add anything else. Okay. Harbor Department status report, Mr. Algert.
Great, thank you. I'll start it off by saying Susan Lichtenbaum is, I think, on her second to last chemo treatment today, and not feeling great again today, but it is her reports are good. She's feeling really good considering the situation most of the time, maybe not so great today, but I think she's really encouraged and it's going well, and I hope that, you know, within a couple months, not that we don't love Polly, but
Polly sure will be glad to have her back.
Polly would be glad. That's the way I should have put it, is Polly would be glad, I'm sure, too. And I appreciate Polly filling in for all these Thursday night, too. That's been really great. And so Sue's doing well, and hopefully she's nearing the end of her cycle of treatments.
I ran into her at City Hall a few days ago, and you know, her spirits are good, and she seems to be strong, and she's a fighter. And that's it's good to see her coming to the end of the treatments.
Yeah. So CMANC Washington Week, we had a great trip, a lot of meetings. The mayor was incredible. She went to every single meeting, more than me, because the flights, I got really messed up by flights out of San Luis, and they lost luggage and everything else. So I missed actually a day. But she went to every meeting, and the excellent meeting with Mrs. Capps, talking about a half-hour sitting with Mrs. Capps, talking about all her issues here. Probably 8 or 10 different agency visits. And I wanted to report to you, too, the Cable Fisheries Liaison Committee just had their grant meetings, and we did just get notice that we received a grant to reimburse the city for up to $6,000 of our Washington, D.C. trip costs. So that's great, and that means that that trip won't cost the city anything. We'll get all our costs reimbursed, and I'm going to apply again next year. I hope that might become a regular thing. I think they did that once 2 years before, and so that's a good news, too. The Marine Life Protection Act, I think this is a little bit old news here since it's been reported in the paper, but Dean Tyler, fantastic gesture by Dean and cost. He rented an airplane and flew Roger Anderson and a number of other people from the community up to the Eureka meeting to testify in front of the Fish and Game Commission on the Marine Life Protection Act. The good news is there are some changes that were at a last minute proposed, and they are scheduled for consideration by the Fish and Game Commission at their meeting in April 12th or 13th in Bodega. We hope that the commission is there with us. Speaking of Michelle, salmon season is the next report, and maybe I'll ask, Verges and Central Coast Salmon Enhancement just held a salmon seminar getting ready for the open of recreational salmon season, and I don't know how many people that aren't absolutely involved in this don't realize what a big event that is. I mean, to get almost 200 people to come to a dinner and hear to somebody lecture to them and learn about regulations is pretty remarkable. Maybe you could help fill that out a little bit, Michelle.
Yeah, it went okay. We had a couple hundred people there, and it looked like most everybody was having fun. And we raised a few $1,000s for Central Coast Salmon Enhancement. It was also sponsored this year by Fine Line Homes and the Sportsman Pub. And just a lot of donations from the community, a lot of support from the community this year. And I drug on for about 5 hours, I think. We got a lot of information out of it. Had an awesome seminar at the end. But it was a good chance for everybody to get together since we haven't been able to fish for so long and get excited about the season opening Saturday. Whether we catch them or not, we'll be able to fish, so that'll be fun.
I know there's trips scheduled out of Verges, and we hope to see the boat launch ramp full again this weekend. That would be great, and let's hope there's fish. We'll see a lot of people in town, and I think today the PFMC was going to announce the commercial season. We all hope it opens May 1, but I haven't heard that news yet. The Blessing of the Fleet is on April 15th. That'll start at noon at the North Tee Pier. That's an event that's great for the public. Also that same day, the Yacht Club is doing their open. I know the public's invited to that event, too. Am I right, Lynn? I believe to the Yacht Club opening day, I'm sure.
A lot of guests,
yeah.
Mike.
Sorry. We do have an awful lot of guests usually. They are invited by members.
Okay, thanks. But between those two events, it's a great day on the waterfront, and it's really fun for us to see things getting going again for getting ready for summer. The Northern California Oceans Foundation, we did get contacted by this new group that would is interested in creating a reef project around here. They are very preliminary, checking into the potential of trying to dispose of naval or use naval vessels and create reefs in this area. It's very, very complicated stuff, but you know, our position is that's interesting if it can be done in a way that could be permitted by all the various agencies and is no cost to the city and a benefit to the community in terms of a better habitat or, you know, even a potential. They're talking about trying to create scuba and diving resources that might be visited by people. So just to let you know that happened, the summer lifeguard, we've began our summer lifeguard hiring process. We've got two young men that ran the program last season are back again this year. And we just did closed our recruitment last week and then did our testing on Saturday. Excellent. We've never had such a good turnout of excellent candidates. Unfortunately, we weren't even able to hire all the excellent ones, but I think we've made a hire. I think we've hired seven.
More than that. There were 14 excellent applicants.
Recently, the opportunity came up to get these vessels. They were both, I guess, you know, it's unfortunately, again, it costs the city money. And these are one situation as a good example of it was a documented vessel, and we had the owner of the vessel come in and tell us that he was going to give the vessel to somebody else for a dollar or zero. And I think we've talked before about the difficulties in documented vessels. If we don't have a willing owner and to acquire a title and pursue a lien is incredibly expensive. So we made an arrangement with this vessel owner that if he would turn over title of the vessel to us and pay his bill in full, that we would take possession of it and destroy it. So we did at city cost. It's a judgment call on my part. In my opinion, we're far better off getting rid of these vessels before they cause a sinking or additional problems that are associated with somebody who takes a boat who doesn't have any resources, that gets it for zero. So that's the kind of situation we're in now. And that one was obviously a fishing vessel in its day. The other vessel was it was that old Chris Craft boat that was at our dock for about a month and a half, and so that was destroyed too. Snowy plover season, nesting season began. We put the fencing up. I think you've all seen that. We may have even talked about it the last meeting. We put the letter in from the Northern California Oceans Foundation about the reef project, so there was some more information there. I don't know if the public, and we did also notify you here. We provided you a notice here that the San Luis Obispo Chamber of Commerce Legislative Council lunch next April expansion, but it looks like the SLO Chamber is determined to at least hear potential expansion at their forum. And that's my end of my report.
Mr. Algert, on Washington Week, the CMINC, I know how much work it is, and I'm sure Mayor Peters came back very tired. It was a worthwhile week always when I went, and it does accomplish things. Were you able to meet with Congressman McCarthy? Because I know I made a phone call. I know Mrs. Capps has always been very supportive, but we're hoping to get another supporter there. Did you accomplish anything there?
Well, yeah, we were, and we were able to brief him on. He's the replacement for Bill Thomas, and we were able to brief him on the CMINC since he's relatively new, and that was a good opportunity to tell him about CMINC and the California navigation issues.
Did he make it to the function?
I don't think so. No. I don't think he made it to the function, but anybody that we can talk to in Congress that we can convince them that California marine issues are important, we'll do that. So that was a great opportunity.
And what was your sense on the budget as far as future dredgings go? Because we're on the list, are we going to be able to continue maintenance?
It's every year for the last 4 years we've gone back there and we're recommending $4 million for the full harbor dredging, the two back channels. And for the last 4 or 5 years, we've gotten the dredging money in only for the entrance area, which is what we say is the bare minimum for safety. And so the Corps of Engineers Civil Works projects were funded potentially a little higher next year. So you never know, and we just keep advocating. You know, the good news is that some ports and harbors on the West Coast have lost all dredging funding, some of the smaller ports and harbors, and we've been able to maintain ours. I would, for those folks that think it's automatic, it's not.
No.
So we're doing okay to keep the Yaquina coming, and the Yaquina will be here again in June this year. And we have 22 days, I think, at $1.45 million of work in the harbor, and that should keep us up at least with the entrance cleared out.
And you're cautiously optimistic that that pattern is fairly well set, and we can hope for at least the harbor mouth maintenance over the next couple of years?
I think we're in pretty good shape on holding that, you know, in the next 2 or 3 years at least.
Yeah. I think that, you know, the board needs to know how hard Mr. Algert works on that, because I've watched him and I've gone back there with him, and we've made our case for the uniqueness of Morro Bay and the, you know, the location and the safety. I think that making a special case out of it is the best thing we can do, and I'm glad that you went, and I'm glad that the cable liaison people came forward to pick up the tab on that, because it is truly important to get back there and lobby, because the people that don't go and lobby don't get funded. Anyone else have any closing comments this evening? Go ahead.
I would just like you I would agree with what the chairman just said in regards to the thanks to you for the hard work.
They want to add? Rick?
Well, I don't know if we listed it here, but I owe Ms. Meisner a report on liveaboards and the board ordinance enforcement, and we will do that at the next meeting, or certainly we'll schedule it. We also hopefully should have the parking management plan that we've been talking about. The report, the draft report is in, and I think Bruce Hambo, the public services director, has told me he plans on coming making a presentation on that at your May meeting. So that should be a pretty good full agenda for May. I'm also going to give you all a heads up that we are talking in the audience about, in the office, about something that we feel the time is ripe to at least discuss in public, the idea of establishing a transfer fee for mooring sales, mooring transfers, or some kind of policy that may help us limit the bonus value or the escalating value of privately sold mooring agreements. And if I'm puzzling with that, maybe you just want to hold off, or you can answer questions, because I know some people may not understand all that how it works. But the basic issue is that we allow moorings to transfer upon request to the mooring holder. The mooring holder owns the gear and tackle, but the space is the public's, and we provide a 30-day agreement for that mooring gear and tackle to be there, and the boat that allows the boat to be there. As we have seen, especially in recent years, and especially with the pressure coming from some of the Back Bay boats moving into our facilities, it appears that supply has really gone well below demand, prices increasing even into the hundreds of thousands of dollars in some areas. So that's just a warning for those of you that I would expect that maybe we'll be proposing something to you this summer.
Great. Sure. Go ahead. Mike?
Rick, the ice machine should be done within a couple months, I would imagine, hopefully. It seems like it's coming along pretty good.
I've been lectured lately about using the word hopefully, but
yeah.
May 1, we really think. I mean, it's going pretty good. So,
well, I'd like to sometime in the future, in the next month may be too busy, but maybe in June or July, agendize that boatyard conceptual plan. So we can toss it around and see if we can find an architect that might want to do some work on it and agree about maybe how big it should be and whatever. But maybe we could do that in June or July.
Yeah.
Ways away.
Usually we cancel our July meeting. I hope you might hold to that policy. But you know, the council did fund starting on a capital project to start on a concept plan work or planning work for the boatyard. And I agree we need to do that. And I appreciate the fact that you remembered. I asked if we could just defer that until we got the ice machine, so you haven't forgotten.
June would be fine with me.
June or August.
Yeah, well, June would be better, but August. If
I agree, we need to. I don't know. We need to put it on the agenda, and we need to get going and hire a consultant to get some work done.
Let's try for June anyway. If it's too busy, we'll do it in August.
Okay.
Anything else? If not, we are adjourned. Thank you.